John Lavender. How are you?
Good.
Yeah? You're here because last episode, 131, we tasted some wine. We got the name wrong, but we were very close. We were like Lav, but Lavin, we were just doing our best, right? And we were close. I was like, man, it's Scandinavian. It has to be. And come to find out, it was just English and has to do with somewhat of your name, but not quite.
Yeah.
So it's Lavin.
Yeah.
Okay. And from what vineyard?
Finney Hill. This particular vintage is from Finney Hill.
Finney Hill. Where's that located?
I'd say it's about just west of like the Horseheaven Hills. You can get to it through the Horseheaven Hills, or you can get to it like if you were to like hop out into Patterson on the gorge, head west on 14, and then cut in. So it's kind of that area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very smooth. Definitely different than what I've had, or maybe I just have a palate for it now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really good. So what got you in the wine business?
Oh, man. I mean, how far back do you want to go?
Well, let's – where did it all start?
I mean, it all started – I actually worked in beer first.
Mm-hmm.
Like I pointed out earlier, I worked at the Mount Hood Brewing Company.
Yeah.
As a dishwasher. But okay. I was also making the root beer.
That root beer.
And then I learned how to learn about brewing there and kind of learn about how to fill kegs and clean them and how systems work. And then I moved back here and was actually sitting in on a surgery that I had for an injury I had for years. I had applied to Ice Harbor, Atomic, and Rattlesnake, all three of them to brew.
Yeah. Nothing.
Anyways, I was getting ready for the surgery and the gal that was hooking me up to my IVs noticed all my Mountain Brewing Company gear.
Yeah.
And started getting to talking. I was like, I want to work in a brewery, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, my boyfriend's the head brewer of Ice Harbor. I'll give him a call while you're in surgery. And so the next day, I just like hobbled into the brewery and talked to Russ and boom, I had a job.
Okay.
And that's how I met Todd. I started working there about the same time Todd did. I think he was brewing. He was brewing a little bit before me. But they gave me the same yeast book.
Yeah.
I still read it today.
Todd did?
No, or Ice Harbor did. The book that they gave him, he also gave me a copy. And okay. I still read it today. I was reading about yield factors for something completely unrelated to winemaking and brewing. It was more for a composting thing. So it's a good book. And then I eventually got a harvest opportunity with Bookwalter, and that was like my first introduction to wine.
Okay.
And I did that for a autumn, and then because that's when harvest season ends, so just the grapes come off the vines. And then I went back to Ice Harbor, worked for like another year and a half or whatever, and just transitioned to Sun River Vintners, Diesel Good Cider. And worked there for a little bit. And then Kyle Welch got on. He started working there.
Yeah.
And I worked with Kyle he was the head winemaker there for, you know, a couple years. And at one point he just approached me and asked me if I wanted to make wine. And I said, sure, I'll give it a shot. And he gifted me my first half ton. Just gave it to me. And he let me use his barrels. And just kind of showed me how to, you know, he just mentored me on winemaking, really. And then it turned out well. It was 2017. It just turned out well. Everything was great. And so then I bought a ton. I bought a whole entire ton. And then I just went from there and, you know, eventually marketed it, and just started selling it to local businesses and friends and family and other people that heard about it.
And stuck ever since?
Yeah, it's stuck ever since. I haven't made wine for the last couple of years. I've been kind of busy, but I think this year I'm going to get back into it.
So started with the beer.
Yeah.
How many years for in the beer?
Oh, shoot. Probably like 3 or 4 years or something.
Three or four.
Yeah. Something like that. Probably closer to three.
And what was it with wine? What was it about wine that just basically was like, you know, enough beer, Let's go to wine.
Honestly, opportunity and money.
Is it the money?
Yeah, it was for me. It was more of just like, I figured there was more opportunity in winemaking in the Tri-Cities than brewing at the time. Because at the time, there was only Atomic, Ice Harbor, and Rattlesnake.
Right.
And I don't think Sage had started.
Nope.
No, not at all. That was it. And it was just hard to like really, I don't know. I'd have a difficult time making a real living, like just brewing beer.
What is it about wine that brings in the money? Because I mean, there's so many winemakers.
I think it's the school. I think, well, there's a number of other things, and I think it's agriculture plays a big part of it. I don't know. Actually, I'm not quite sure, but maybe just more people want to grow grapes. The romance to it. I'm not quite sure.
The price of the bottle.
Yeah. But I mean, the school definitely helps because, I mean, we've got this, like, you know, we've got an institution now. I mean, there's a number of things. It's hard to pinpoint it. I always thought it was weird that we didn't have more activity with beer with the Yakima Valley being right there.
Exactly.
I thought it was so strange. Like, it always kind of blew my mind.
It's coming up, though, man.
Yeah, I know. It really is. It's coming up, and there's a lot more breweries in town, and they're all doing great.
Yeah.
I feel like Ice Harbor really like laid a foundation. A lot of people learned from them and they started doing craft brewing before it was really a thing at all. Before it became a popular thing. And they kind of laid a foundation and now all these people that have actually learned from them have started breweries, but they've started it on kind of where the bar is set now in the industry, I feel like. And
real quick, is your phone on airplane mode?
Oh, no.
Totally forgot.
Oh, yeah. That's all right.
All right. So, Ice Harbor, Mount Hood, favorite brewery, man?
Between the two? Or just in general?
In general.
Oosh, in general. There's so many. It's a hard question to answer. Right now, my favorite beer is the Kolschen Lager, so I would say Kolschen's like my favorite beer.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's so good.
Kolsch is your...
Kolschen, no, it's Kolschen Lager. The brewery is called Kolschen.
Where's that at?
In Bellingham.
Oh, I don't go to the west side that much, I do, it's the lower...
Oh, okay.
The lower guys, just because, you know, I like to... promote them or give them my business. Like Elysian or you know, someone
that's doing fine.
Don't have to worry about anything.
Kyle started doing business in Bellingham. They got like a distributor. I think their only distributor is kind of in that region of the state. And he brought me back some Kolschen Lager.
Okay.
And because we just drink beers at work or whatever. I just like got hooked on it.
Okay.
And now my girlfriend's family lives up that way.
Okay.
So I've got access to it.
Yeah.
I've got some access to it. It's pretty good.
favorite brewery in the Tri right now?
Right now? I mean, I'm pretty steadfast with Ice Harbor just because I learned so much there. And that's the best job I've ever had to this day. It's the most fun I've ever had at a job. But I think. I think Iconic. I really like Todd. I like what he's doing. Yeah.
On him recently.
Yeah, I really like what he's doing. But it's tough because I really like Sage's beers. I like Tyson. I like what he does. And I just went to what's that other one?
Moonshot.
Moonshot for the first time, and I had a good time there. I had their Pilsner or something like that. I don't know. I think my girlfriend had their Pilsner. I had their lager. We just watched some hockey and had some beer, and it was like good experience. So
yeah,
really liked it.
Moonshot's more of a soccer place, though.
Yeah, it's a soccer place for sure. I actually send people there for games. Like people are like, "Where's the best place?" And Moonshot, I don't really follow soccer at all. But I'm just like, "Oh, you gotta go to Moonshot."
Yeah,
like, it just but you know, we went in there. The hockey was on, and so
favorite brew.
Right now, I've just been really drinking lagers and pilsners. Like, are you talking about flavor or, like, I guess beer from a brewery?
Just, you know, Todd, I speak highly of the West Coast.
Yeah.
IPA.
Yeah.
His Cochise, which he's made into a hazy, I guess.
Oh, really? I didn't realize
that. Yeah, I've got on to him. He's like, it's not a hazy. And he's like, I'll never make a hazy. And then he's like, he... touches yeah. it up every 3 to 6 months. And I'm like, dude, it looks like a hazy. He's like, no, shush.
Yeah. You know, right now, it's hard saying. I've been way into a lager and pilsner kick. But I've weirdly gotten into Hefeweizens lately.
Yeah.
It's super strange. Like, I know, it's like a weird thing to just be like, oh, I just want to try a brewery's Hefeweizen.
I was in Hefe's or wheat beers for a while until I just got messed up on it.
Really?
I never went back. I can't drink a Hefe. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but lately it's just I've been like craving. I'm gonna go to breweries.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, with the orange?
No, I don't.
Just
do,
straight yeah, up.
Just straight up.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So the wine.
Yeah.
You've been in, and that's the reason why you're here.
Yeah.
Lavin.
Yeah.
Lavin, but you didn't want to associate anything with your last name.
Well, not so much my last name. Well, it's not that I wanted to associate with my last name. I just didn't really want to associate it with, like, the bush. I mean, it's just like a shrub. I mean, it's a beautiful flower.
Yeah, you make it sound like it's, you know, a tumbleweed.
Yeah.
Your last name is yeah. John Tumbleweed. Yeah.
No. I just wanted my own room to do what I want with it under, like, I mean, Lavin is associated with my last name, which is great.
But it's a crisp name, man.
Nice. I wanted to be able to, like... just have more room instead of confine it to, like, the elegance of a flower, I guess.
And it also puts you to sleep. It's yeah, very, yeah. you know, yeah, it's relaxing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The time when you started.
Yeah.
Till now, what have you been doing? Have you been promoting it? Have you been selling it locally?
I was selling it locally till I ran out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've got a little bit. I got a couple cases left, and I'm going to library some and then try to sell it like in a few years from now, and then also save some for myself. But I've really been finishing up engineering school and just focusing on that. And I graduate in May. And
nice. Congrats.
Thanks. And congrats. I was just talking the other day about my plans for making wine this fall, so
okay.
get back into it as soon as I don't have to worry about homework and like all this
stuff. Right. What school? Engineering.
Mechanical engineering at WSU. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Nice. Congrats, man. Yeah. The last engineer that we interviewed was from Tainum.
Okay.
He was civil engineering.
Okay.
And he has his own yeast and everything.
Wow.
Bike.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. he has it down to the science. He took us to school from the science and everything else. And I'm like, dude,
yeah,
the engineering. And what did I have to do? I had to make a joke of on from Pineapple Express, you know, when Saul's saying that he's going to become a civil engineer and he's going to make bathrooms so kids can take a shit in, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I did that. And yeah. But man. Fantastic brew there, and it's almost like a sparkling wine.
Is that
he makes?
Is that the one? It's like in Clay Elm or something.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And he was part of Mule and Elk, and then he just man, he has only as he says on the episode, only 34 barrels. And let me tell you. Those are a lot of oak barrels.
Yeah, it's a lot. 34 is quite a bit.
Yeah, and he puts honey in it and just let it sit, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's nothing. There's nothing like it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's good. He's on it. He's on it.
So he uses like the Kvike yeast, and then and then he just ferments it dry. Like he's as dry as he can go.
Dude, oh, it's so good, man. It's so good. Yeah, and it's like 3%, 4%.
Oh wow.
Day drinkers, man. Yeah. And I think one of them is a day drinker.
Really?
It's called the day drinker. Yeah. Mm. Whenever you get into it, check it out. But engineering, would you be working and then head first into the wine business?
So I'm gonna start working this summer, and I think what I'm gonna do is I'll have money so I can like buy grapes. I mean, because it's like it's expensive to get into these things, man. Like,
right.
You know, I'll be able to buy grapes, and I'll be able to get my own thing going, because like I said, you know, Kyle gifted me my first half ton. I had to buy a ton the next year, but, you know, he, like, lended barrels to me and other piece of equipment. So it'd be nice to like be able to just do it myself.
So half ton.
Yeah.
Put it in perspective for myself and the listeners. What does a half a ton of grapes look like?
Well, they're in these fruit bins, but it ends up being one barrel.
One barrel?
About 25 cases.
Okay. Yeah. And how many are in a case?
12.
12?
750 milliliter
bottles.
That's
a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It was so intimidating when I was, because like I wasn't set up to sell it till the 2018 was done. So, yeah. I mean, I had about 75 cases between the two vintages and like, I was like, holy shit. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to have to like offload all this somehow, but it went. And thankfully I had a lot of support from friends and family and just local businesses and was able to.
So did he, when he, you know, he gave you the stuff, did he pat you in the back, say, don't mess up or good luck?
He mentored me and it was actually really cool. We took, like port barrels. So like, I can't remember what the barrels gallonage is for wine barrels, but port barrels are basically like at least two times bigger than a regular wine barrel.
Right.
So we took the heads off of them, flipped them over. So they're standing straight up and we fermented grapes straight in these barrels. And it was a really cool experience. And you know, he did it along with me. So It was his idea. And so we both did it along together and he kind of just like helped me along the way and everything. And then I had to press it myself. A half ton won't really fit into an industrial sized wine press. Mm-hmm. And so I got like a basket press from Ice Harbor. And just like the little, you know, round basket press that home winemakers do. And like had to like rig up this like ridiculous thing with pallets and like a forklift and like tip this thing into this basket press. It was insane. But it worked, you know, and got it done. And
before he gave that to you, how much wine have you been making prior to that?
I made cherry wine one year in like 2014 and it turned out all right. It's more of a mead. It's really flabby. I made it out of like Bings and Rainiers and like, apparently when you make fruit wines, you want to use stuff that's acidic, just so it has a grip, you know, and this has no grip at all, but it's, and actually I opened a bottle the other day. It's not spoiled. It's pretty good. But, so I did that and then me and a buddy just made wine. One year, this guy was giving out. This is I was working in the homebrew shop at Ice Harbor. And this guy comes in with a flyer and he's like, "I'm giving out grapes. I don't got time to make wine. You got to pick them though." So we went to his house and like clipped all these grapes off his vines.
Yeah,
and brought them to my house and I made wine there. But really, on a professional level, I had just I'd worked some harvests and helped make wine, but I'd never really like done it on my own.
So you went big.
Kind of,
You went big or go home.
I wouldn't say, I didn't make like a big volume, but I went like legit. Like I wasn't going to, at this point I'd been working in fermentation for like 6 or 7 years on a professional level.
Yeah.
And so like, I just had the confidence. I was like, I could do this,
but
you know, I could like do this from start to finish.
What I meant was it's all or nothing, dude.
Yeah.
Like if you messed up, you messed up.
Yeah, I messed up.
Good thing it was free, but
yeah.
So back to perspective part, how much would that half a ton be if I purchased something?
Yeah.
How much would that be?
I mean, I got the full ton for like $1,000 and I don't know, you know, if you got a deal on that or what. I mean, so if you were saying I got a full ton for $1,000, you could say that half ton was $500.
That's a lot of grapes.
There's kind of a varying things in there, you know, right? Like, what vineyard did you buy it from?
Right.
And sometimes I feel like I even got that $1,000 for pretty cheap because the vineyard had overproduced. And that happens too in wineries. Like
how often?
I think it almost happens every year. I could be wrong, but I feel like it happens every year. But what happens is, you know, winemakers, they want to lock in their certain grapes. So they get their contracts, they pay for their grapes, whatever. But then come like the day of harvest, vineyard might be like, I got too many grapes. I'll sell you this for this much. And then a winemaker can be like, and then kind of comes this, you know, wheeling and dealing and moving grapes around at the last minute.
I didn't know it was like that though. I think
what it is my theory on it is that every year is so different for harvesting and harvest is so like just balls to the wall. Like we start, we harvest, things get made into wine, boom, it's done.
It's structured.
Yeah. Well, and it's just because everything's kind of fresh. I mean, you think about hops. I mean, like hops contracts are a real thing, you know, like breweries get right. locked in and it's hard to get hops or whatever. But hops get preserved, you know, they get vacuum sealed. They get preserved in various different ways, whether made into extracts or whatever.
Yeah.
And so like you could have like a storehouse of hops and then, you know, whatever isn't in contract, you could still sell out at your premium prices. Whereas like at the end of grape season, farmers are like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that's just my take on it perspective.
I didn't know it was like that.
Yeah.
I thought it would have been like cutthroat. That's mine and whatever.
Well,
whatever we waste.
To some level, it can be cutthroat, right? Like yeah. Red Mountain's probably all spoken for all the time. You know,
yeah. You know, I can't even run on the mountain
because they
took it over. So that's the only beef I have.
I think that there is to some degree, depending on where your grapes are coming from. But if I was to start a vineyard, you know, and I didn't have a name for myself, it's just kind of like, you know, maybe the region I grew them in is good or whatever. And that's the best thing I have.
Mm-hmm.
I got to sell them for what anyone will take them for. And further down the road, I might make a name for myself, but still, you know, like, you know, maybe, you know, I've only got these three wineries that bought, you know, reserved this much tonnage, but somehow I produced, you know, an extra half ton or an extra ton. And it's like, I gotta sell it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go to different kinds of wine?
Yeah. I think I'm gonna do a Syrah this year. I'd like to do another Cab Sauv, a Syrah, and I was thinking of a third one, but I don't know. I haven't really decided on it. It'd be nice to do three, so that way I could also do a red blend. So I can have four wines, you know,
kind
of thing.
All right.
Yeah, probably a ton of each.
Do you think you'll start in the harvest, fall?
Or, yeah, I mean, it's going to be – right now I got to kind of start planning out what I want to do. And
yeah.
Figuring out where I'm going to make it. And then just kind of get an idea for it and just be ready for, you know, harvest. And I'll be working, so I'm going to – I think my girlfriend said she'd help out, and I think my dad will too. And
nice.
I'll have some help because nice. I won't be able to be there all the time. But
that's pretty cool that you got a job lined up and everything. All right. Yeah. So you got it. You got it. You're in that structure mode.
Yeah,
you're in that routine.
Yeah.
Work. Let's get that wine.
Yeah.
Would you ever think just to make wine full-time?
If I could. I mean – If legitimately I could just quit working and I had like a, you know, a business that was going and I could see it being possible. Yeah. Again, it's like an opportunity thing. Like it'd be so cool to get back into beer, but I just feel like,
wine is where it's at. Huh?
I don't know why. Yeah. I think it's almost easier to get into. I think the overhead for brewing equipment in a brewery is quite a bit more and it's harder to like, you know, start from the bottom without, you know, a lot of resources.
Do you think beer critics are worse than wine critics?
I don't think they're worse. I think they could be just as bad. I think on both sides, you can get, you know what I mean? You can get the same asshole anywhere.
Yeah, right. What about the sticklers, though? I mean, it's around this area, Walla Walla, Tri-Cities, Yakima, you know, the whole valley.
Yeah.
There's so many wineries. I mean, it's almost saturated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not raining on a parade. Is there a market for more wineries here in Tri-Cities?
You know, that's tough. It's so saturated.
So saturated.
It's so tough. You know, I think I personally have more opportunity because I have a brand going already.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Like, there's not that many breweries. You know,
not so much, and especially good ones.
Yeah,
and I'm not knocking any of them. You know, it's the brews coming.
Yeah,
the brews are changing. Yeah. One of the breweries that changed drastically, and I put them on the spot was Bombing Range.
Yeah,
I mean since 2016 to now, they're not the same beer. They've blown up to better, and
yeah,
they admit they've, you know. sprinkled some things and changed, you know, the recipe for the better. And yeah, others, you won't find me there. But
I think Sage and Iconic stepped up that bar for, like, you know, like the mom and pop idea of like having a homebrew set up and then starting a brewery was pretty legit back in the day. But now you've got people like Todd and Tyson that just like went full bore with like systems and everything, and they knew what they were doing. So like, yeah, somebody that started off like small, like family business wants to do a brewery in this town now has to do it on like the industry, like a bar. There's a bar set now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
Todd also started with Gilgamesh too, right?
Yeah, he worked there. He worked there. He left Ice Harbor to go work for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Todd's been around for sure.
And I'll give Sage credit, man. Their veteran brew is my favorite in that.
And Tyson's been around too. I mean, not only did he work at for Yakima Chief, but he was in like the whole like brewing scene in Walla Walla from like way back in the day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I'm going to ask you, man, favorite wine in the Tri-Cities?
Oh, I mean, I would have to say with Longship. I would have to say Longship. I mean, it sounds so cliche just because I have this relationship with them. But I really like their wine, and it's just like...
He's a staple too.
And he's like easy for me to drink, you know what I mean? Like I honestly get frustrated going wine tasting.
You do?
Oh, yeah. It's just so much. Like, it's just not that enjoyable to me to, like, go wine tasting. I mean, it can be, but... It depends on the experience and, like, who I'm with and what we're doing. You know, like, me and my girlfriend just went wine tasting in California. And it was, like... We went to a winery. And it was, like, it was cool.
Napa
was,
or somewhere else?
No, it was actually the Central Coast.
Oh, okay. Like Santa Cruz
area, Capitola? So I flew into Fresno... And we went out to, what was it called? Cambria? Yeah. Hmm. And we had wine at this seafood restaurant one night or Friday night. And Saturday night, we went to the winery and, like, tried, like, just, like, a flight of wines or whatever, a tasting tray. And it was pretty good. But as far as, I don't know. Yeah, Longship's probably my favorite.
Longship?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy is really nice, man. He's helped out a lot of people, especially Tier. And everything else.
Yeah, he's helped out a lot of people.
Yeah, he's very nice. I just want to go there and like introduce myself just because, man, he's inspired a lot of people and also helped people. You don't hear that a lot.
No.
You don't hear that a lot. So definitely need to check him out. And it's right by Iconic and Bomb Range.
No, he has helped out a lot of people.
Yeah.
For sure. And he's super knowledgeable and he's willing to like share his knowledge too.
Yeah, well, he shares his equipment.
Yeah, he shares his equipment. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, sharing equipment, it's pretty good. But almost like the knowledge thing is like, because that's like, those are the secrets.
Right. You
know what I mean? Those are the things that like you either go to school for or you get through tribal knowledge. And like, yeah.
He's both or tribal?
Well, he went to school. You know, he went to school.
Mm, okay.
But he shares it as tribal knowledge, you know? Like, he's not afraid to like let you know, like, you know, what you're doing and what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong and, you know, how to be successful and stuff, which is pretty good.
Favorite vineyard or winery in Walla Walla?
Oh, man.
I used to like Charles Smith.
I think, man, what was that one? Tranche? I think that's what it's called. I like that place. It was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like out there in wine country in Walla Walla. Mm-hmm. Their winery is cool. Their wines are good.
All right, I have to ask you, favorite brewery there?
Oh, in Walla Walla? Shoot, you know, I've never really drank at any of the breweries in Walla Walla. I've had Latinapur in Waitsburg, but I've never like had it in Walla Walla.
Yeah,
and I've never been. I've had a couple Crossbucks at like Tap and Barrel or someplace.
Yeah,
but I honestly don't think I've ever really had beer in Walla Walla.
All right. Well, first off, you need to check out $5.
Okay,
$5. Ranch Brewing.
Okay, where's that at?
South side of Walla Walla.
Okay.
In the hills near Walla Walla Cheese Factory.
Okay.
Yeah, very nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Never even heard of it.
Josh Howlett.
Okay.
We had him on, and oh man, it's like the scenery of the blues, beautiful, and the beer is like top notch.
Yeah.
He has a great seasonal. I feel the seasonal can compete with the big dogs like Deschutes, you know. Yeah, okay. Cranky Old Man is what it's called. Okay. And man, it is clean.
Okay.
It's clean. And then Quirk is good too. They're seasonal. I like the high octane beverages. So,
okay.
But man, they have a great chocolate stout, and man, it's Ghirardelli or Godiva, one of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's good. Yeah. Check it out. And that their Quirk is in the airplane or the airport area.
At the airport where all the wineries are.
In that industrial area. Yakima. Let's go Yakima Valley to Yakima.
Oh, man. Honestly,
Bale Breaker.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I really like varietal. Mm-hmm. I like varietal. I really like what varietal does. I think, and it's crazy because it seems like that dude puts out so many different beers.
Yeah.
And they're all really good.
Right.
And then what was another one that was pretty good? What's their logo's like blue and white checkered.
Blue and white checkered.
Yeah.
Where at?
Somewhere in Yakima.
Yakima and Bend. I'm a stickler when it comes to taste.
You can
really get house palate, and yeah. They
I see what you're saying, yeah.
They have their same mix, and it all blends in. Bend blends in, Yakima blends in.
I can see that.
Yeah, I would agree with Bell Breaker and Varietal. Varietal also is a partner with this podcast.
It's pretty
cool. Yeah,
Varietal's pretty good.
Yeah, they're good. But Chris Baum, he's one of the best. And the collabs, there's so many. Yeah.
He's really doing what breweries are doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Outside of like Eastern Washington. That's the thing that's difficult around here in this region. You know, there's not a lot of, like, a lot of people doing what this, like, the fast paced stuff that's like really going on out there. And like that guy is. That guy is like collabing. He's doing like all these different style. He's just doing what all those like Portland breweries are doing.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, and he brings it over there too. I mean, Fort George. I mean, come on. All right. Vineyard?
Oh, I don't know.
There's so many though.
There's so many. There's I don't so know many. Which one's good. The ones I get my grapes from.
All right. Well, you know, all I have to say is I only try wineries for my wife, and so I can end up in the brewery afterward. That's the claim to fame for me on the winery.
That's
man.
All right.
So I know like when you try wine, there's different notes, correct? Yeah. And there's when describing, there's no wrong answer, correct?
I don't think so. Well, I think, you know, I think that wine styles, from what I'm pretty layman at wine, like in beer in some regards, but I'm pretty layman at wine. But I think wine styles, there's like, you know, there's kind of profiles to each, like, you know, particular, like, you know, varietal of grape, right? Like, this is a Cab Sauv because like it came from a grape that is a Cab Sauv.
Yeah.
And so like I think like, you know, Cab Sauvs are supposed to have like a nice like acid bite to them, maybe some like
top it off.
Yeah, sure.
There's a little
maybe some like dark fruits, blackberries, maybe like a little bit of like mahogany or leather or something like that. But I mean, like, I think each varietal of grape has its own general realm of, you know, things that you're going to taste, you know, but there's not, I mean, but you know, your palate and your perception is totally like your palate and your perception. So there's no, there's no really wrong answers.
So, what is the kind of flavor, the taste that you tried to, make while the Desert Blood, the 2018 Desert Blood?
I think, you know, as far as the thing about grapes, like, I mean, I wanted, like, the only thing I really can understand how to do to try to get is acid structure, that acid grip. And that has everything to do with just, like, how long your skins are on the wine. And, just how long your fermentation takes, kind of a thing. But other than that, all these other flavors, those are so just dependent on the fruit itself, like that year, really, and just the variety of grape, like all those other things. So I don't, you know, all the fruit flavors and all the things you taste in that area just are kind of what come out of the final product, I think.
How long did you ferment it for?
Oh, this one was probably a pretty typical 7 to 10 days. But my 2017 was a little bit longer, because the thing about Cab Sauv is they're ready like late in the season. Cab Sauv's ready like towards the end of October. And so like the garage or warehouse that we were in that we were doing fermentations, it got pretty cool. And so there was a long soak period with the skins on the juice, like on the wine before. Yeah. Like, I don't think the ferment really stuck, but it was like going pretty slow. And so it just, it extracted a lot from the skins and from the grapes themselves. So it kind of cut down on the acid quite a bit. And that was probably closer to 10 to 14 days or something.
And yeah. So that's all it takes.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and then you gotta, you know, it's the same kind of yeast as like beer yeast. I mean, it's a Saccharomyces yeast, you know, it goes pretty quick. Maybe a little more than 10 days or something, maybe closer to 2 weeks. But then there's more, you know, processing afterwards. Because after you ferment the grapes themselves, you have to press everything out of them. You just want to squeeze the juice out of them.
Yeah.
Which is the wine at that point. Because you put your yeast on your whole grapes.
Right.
For reds, you know. You just, like, throw your grapes in there, dump your yeast and some yeast nutrient in there, and let it go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole process from receiving the grapes to put in a bottle, how long did it take you?
It's like 18 months. Yeah, I mean, you look at a wine bottle and you look at it and you go to the store, you always see wine that's like 2 years ago.
Okay,
that's
yes.
Red wines. That's just where it starts.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like 18 months.
18 months.
Yeah.
And that's why people say, hey, I'm sitting on one. I'm sitting on one. Yeah. Is that what they mean? Yeah, they're really sitting on one?
Yeah, they're really sitting on one.
Okay.
Yeah. And this will be hard for me to get back into it for that reason.
So it will take you 18 months.
Yeah. Unless I want to do like a white. White wines I think you could do within a few months.
Yeah.
But or something.
What's stopping you from doing that?
I don't know how to do it. I got to learn.
Launch it and sell or something.
Yeah. I don't see where I make it. You know, I haven't really approached Kyle with that yet or anything. So, yeah, you're sitting on it, you know, like you have a plan. I think that's my other thing about now that I'll be working. I'll have like more money to like sit on it and like try to get into a little more professionally, but also have, you know, some financial backing for myself.
Did you just get back from vacation too?
Yeah, we were just in California.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It looked like you were some like island.
Oh, yeah. No, Central Coast California is
nice.
The most charming part of California I've ever been to. It blew my mind. My girlfriend, she lived there, like Pismo Beach. So she had all these places to take me and showed me around. And I was like, wow. Like, this is freaking beautiful.
Yeah, we frequent. My wife's from Central Valley, so we'll go to Central Coast a lot.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, I've been to L.A., I've been to San Diego, and I've been to Disneyland, I've been to San Francisco and Sacramento, and they're all pretty cool. And I've been to Napa, and I've been to, like, Humboldt area, and they're all cool, but they're so, like, saturated with people, and you just feel like you're supposed to, like, expect this experience from those places. But going to Central Coast, I just felt like I was in, like a Spanish Mediterranean version of the Oregon coast or something. I was
right.
Whoa, this is crazy.
Yeah, it's not that saturated because of the weather. It's more rainy.
And like, who flies into Fresno if you're not a farmer, you know? Like, the only people that go down to Fresno either have work or, like, my friends that are like, yeah, my dad lives and, you know, here.
Right.
You know, it's like...
All right. So, with being hungry... With, you know, still being in school and grapes and, you know, this and that, you've had your share of peanut butter jelly sandwiches, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you probably still have some. I know I do. I eat peanut butter through the jar.
Man. Yeah. Okay. I just had some peanut butter toast before I came here.
Okay. All right. So my question to you is, how do you build a peanut butter jelly sandwich? And this is a staple. It's a staple. And I'll let you know, man, when people find out that I don't ask that question on social media, they get upset.
Nice.
So I'm just saying, we're 133 deep. This is 133. I have to ask that question. Right. So shoot.
I'll do just a basic traditional peanut butter on one side, jelly on the other piece of bread. And sometimes I grill them. Like sometimes I'll grill one. I'll eat them cold.
Grill.
Yeah, grilled PB&Js.
Grill. Okay. What do you put on the outside? Just butter?
Yeah, like it's just like making a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what's the ratio peanut butter to jelly or jelly to peanut butter?
It's probably split 50-50.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Favorite Adam Sandler movie?
It's split there with Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison.
The originals.
I just grew up in that. I was a kid, you know, and both of us came out. Also, it's like I always wanted to play hockey, but the best my dad could do was golf. So,
yeah.
Happy Gilmore.
In
my heart. I don't know. Probably those two. And then the last one that I really liked from him was probably Big Daddy.
Big Daddy?
Big Daddy was so good. Okay. Like, randomly, I don't know why, but it just resonates with me.
Deschutes or Rogue?
Ooh. Probably Deschutes.
Why?
I really like their craft macro style. Yeah. Okay. I like macro breweries. Okay. You know, if I was to get back into beer, I'd want to do something like how Bellbreaker just like went out the gate, like running, like sporting events, like they were in Safeco Field like the day they opened, kind of a thing. Like, I really think that's I really like craft beer. I love it like so much, but I think there's a big oversight on like the art and skill it takes to do large scale brewing. Just it's to me the process. The processing and the engineering that goes into being able to like just bust out
mass produce
kegs, bottles, cans on like just a consistency level at the same time produce like for sporting events, there's brew houses, grocery stores, restaurants, everything. I find that to be pretty neat. Like, I had a grandfather that owned taverns like in the '70s.
Okay,
he just like pushed Budweiser. And so, like, I just learned,
the pull taps.
Yeah. I mean, he ran like these honky tonk taverns in Eastern Washington and pull tabs, Budweiser, and like shooting pool. And like, I just learned from him that, like, you know, just the beer doesn't stop flowing. Like, just keep it moving.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
What would it take for you to go back to the beer if you had that option?
If I could find a way to really like, do it pretty big, I think. I'd love to do. Yeah, if I could do it pretty big, I think. If it was just big, I mean, it might be cool to do like a really cool craft brewery, but I would really like to do a large scale thing.
Large scale,
yeah. I mean, it's like I would love to like sell beer at hockey games or something. Like, and like, you know, even just like lagers, even like corn lagers. Like, I want to do the beer that like you see at baseball games and you see at hockey games, and people are like eating popcorn and drinking beer and like
drinking your beer.
Yeah, and drinking a lot of it. You know what I mean? Because it's like, man, you go to a sporting event, it's like, especially a baseball game, it's like I can only drink a couple IPAs before I'm like, oh, it's hot. And like,
So with the mass production and go big, how's that different, or how does that compare to the wine movement?
I don't know. I mean, they're kind of two different things, right?
At least for me.
Like,
it sounds like it. So that's why I'm like,
they're kind of two different things.
Yeah.
I kind of, for the wine, I don't know. I have this idea of, I want to start like kind of like, I'm going to get more like really talented artists for like my wine labels and kind of just make a almost more of like, I don't know, just a really cool brand is what I'd like to do for it too. And just make really good wines and kind of get in like the artistry of it and everything like that. I don't know. I've got two different views, I think, definitely between beer and wine. Beer, I want to distribute and like go big, but wine, like,
yeah,
you know, I'd like to have like a small winery, like, yeah.
It's yeah,
yeah,
total opposite.
They're totally opposite. Well, it's because they're two different things, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A brewery, it's like, man, like, a brewery and the equipment and just like the hot side, cold side. You know, you start hot, cool it down, send it over, ferment, and then you get it really cold, and you got refrigeration, and you got kegs,
CO2.
And you got this, and you've just got all these different like cool systems and stuff. And it's just like the idea of like having a brewery that's like large scale that has all these big fermenters and then it has like a whole room for canning and a whole room for bottling and a whole room for kegging just sounds so badass to me.
Okay.
Just having this like factory of like making beer and like keeping that consistency, because beer is also so fast. That's the other thing too, is it's like you're just like humping out beer, and like to do it consistently and produce that much of it is like an art in itself that gets like kind of, I think, overlooked a lot.
You low key have a love for beer still, yeah. Man.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just saying, you still got.
Oh, I think about it all the time.
Yeah. Look at, just your face, man. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why I asked. I was like, what's stopping you, man?
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. I think it's just because I want to do it on that level, I think.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just finding a way to do it. And maybe I'd have to start small or whatever. But there's definitely this hump. Like, you can make, like, you know, a certain amount of beer and do pretty good for yourself and do well. And I feel like I've heard this hump. I've heard that there's, like, this hump when you're doing, like, 2,000 to 3,000 barrels where it's hard to get over it to really, like, blow your scale up, right? Because, like, if you buy a bigger fermenter, you need a bigger kettle.
Right.
You need a bigger mash tun. You need more kegs. You need more distributors. And so it's like there's this difficult hump to like everything in a brewery has to scale up together.
Mm-hmm.
Hoses got to get bigger. Pumps got to get bigger. Like everything's just got to go together. And like I just don't want to get like stuck there. Like I just want to like start up here and like just, know, fly.
One thing about the podcast.
Yeah.
It's really opened my mind on what people do and how happy they are. Like, let's say Chief Spring and Dayton.
Oh, yeah. That dude's got a cool setup, though. You know what I mean?
Badass setup.
Yeah, that guy's
great setup.
Yeah.
And he's set. He's set with his pizza. He has top-notch pizza.
I love that brewery just for, like, that right there.
Bagpiper Scotch Ale is my favorite
there.
And then you go to Brongniart. It's a bit bigger.
Yeah.
I haven't had them on the podcast. I've tried.
I've never been there yet.
No?
No.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's really good. Top-notch pizza.
Yeah.
1-2 punch. The best pizza places in all of Washington, I think. But, and then if you go down, you go to Initiative. It's almost like the same setup as Iconic.
Yeah.
Bombing Range is getting bigger. But if you go to Three Creeks, if you ever get a chance, go to Sisters, Oregon.
Okay.
And go to Three Creeks and see how different they are. And Patty O'Shea, legendary.
Yeah, you told me about him. I have to listen to that.
Patty O'Shea, man. Yeah. He gave me an hour. Hey, I made the best of it. But
really? Okay.
Hey, that guy's legendary. And to know what they do and how they produce and how they have one line of cannery.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've been producing all the way up here, man.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And they did that during COVID.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. Different, big or go home or big or small. I think as long as you're happy, man, I think that's all that matters.
You're absolutely right. It is as long as you're happy. And I think with breweries and wineries, like there's definitely an artistry to it. And it's all based off of what that like artist really wants to do. What they're like. You know, where they find, like, the craft in it. Whereas, like, me, like, for beer, I find the craft is, like, just producing a lot or just sending out kegs and like just really getting the ball rolling constantly. Like, I think that's pretty cool. But somebody else, like, they really pride themselves in their sour program. And they're like,
yeah,
I've even thought like a little farmhouse brewery would also be like,
that would be so cool.
Yeah. But that's so niche. Like, you know, even like, it sounds like those guys in Clee Ellen that you're talking about, that sounds like such a like cool little farmhouse brewery.
You need to
like,
check it out.
I have a huge appreciation for those.
Check them out, man.
Like a Logsden that used to be in outside of Hood River was really good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it just, I guess it's just mindset and everything else, you know, and you get the people like Chainsaw Brewing that I just had. He's right down the road.
Yeah.
Like literally down the road. He fermented or basically cycled through a 100 something pound pumpkin. And then he had a pine IPA that he actually cycled through an actual pine tree.
Wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's nuts, man. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Who's doing that kind of stuff?
Nobody.
I mean, not a lot of people.
I like, you know, and I like that people do that stuff. I like having those beers and I like having them in the cellar.
Yeah.
I like busting them out. I like trying them and everything.
If you ever get bored and you need some merch,
yeah,
he will be glad to give some merch.
Yeah. All right. I'll keep that in mind.
It's good stuff though, man. But no, like seriously, it's pretty cool, man. And you know, I with the wine.
Yeah.
It, you know, I make it very noticeable. I drink it with my wife and that's pretty much it. But I'm starting to gain more knowledge and understanding of it. This is good wine.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
It's clean, and clean is like palatable.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like an aftertaste.
Yeah.
It's just good. Smooth. So that's clean. What do you think of your own product?
I enjoy it. I've drank quite a bit of it. I haven't gotten tired of it yet. I think it tastes like a Cab Sauv. Like, I think it did a pretty good job, you know, sticking to character. It's got that acid bite. It's a little peppery, you know, and it's got a little like dark fruit to it, which I think those are the characteristics. And even the color has like a good, rich, like dark Cab Sauv color. So I think it turned out really well. I'm pretty proud of it. I'm happy I did it. Yeah, I like it.
Best compliment you've had on that, man. Besides clean.
One time I was in I was in France drinking wine, and I was at a like a cafe, and I told the waiter that I made wine, and he kind of chuckled, and he asked me, he's like, in Napa Valley? And I was like, no, in Washington. And then he just straight laughed at me.
Yeah. Okay.
That was the best compliment. I feel like I touched, for a moment there, I touched French wine culture.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of people just always assume Napa. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, Washington's.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, I think there's quite a few wine regions in the United States that I don't even know about.
Right.
I mean, the more you find out, there's like wine in New York, there's wine in Texas, there's wine in Arizona.
Southern Oregon.
It's
Oregon, period.
Yeah, Oregon, period. It's wild. Yeah. But I don't know. For real, though, best compliment was just people liking it in general. Like it made me feel really good to just get general support from people. And whether my friends and family are being nice, you know, I don't know. But the fact that they kept coming back, or, you know, restaurants. I sold a lot to Wine Social. Mark from Wine Social bought a lot of cases from
me. That guy's very nice.
Yeah.
He knows how to party, too.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. That guy sold a lot of my wine for me.
Good.
And Eddie from Endive, he sold quite a bit, too. And those were the biggest compliments I think I got.
Yeah, what did he say about that? I was going to ask you, because I saw on Instagram, social media, that, you know, he did buy some. What did he think of it, man? Obviously,
I think he liked it.
Of it.
Yeah, I think he liked it. I grew up with him, though, so we didn't really, like, talk too much about it.
Jeez, man, here I am. I'm trying to sell it for you.
I've known Eddie forever, and, like, it was really cool to be in, like, his restaurant.
Yeah.
Honestly, just for that, you know what I mean? Like, it was pretty special. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it still on the shelf somewhere? Not like in the grocery store, but at Wine Social, Tap and Barrel, or is it all gone?
Maybe at Tap and Barrel. They only bought a couple cases from me, and I don't know how well it moved. I have no idea. And then maybe at Endive. Like I said, I've got a few cases left that I'm going to hold to like library, and then I'll sell in a couple years. I'll probably sell them like when I start. I'll release them when I like start to release like the next wave of wines that I make this year.
So a case, 24 bottles, you said?
12.
Yeah. Okay, so 12 bottles. How much would that run you?
What did I sell them for? I think it was like 360, like retail. But like I was selling it wholesale for like quite a bit, like 218 or something like that, like to restaurants and stuff.
Yeah, it's
just like a wholesale.
So 12 of those.
Yeah.
You could sell it for that much.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's
not bad at all. I know why you're going to wine.
Yeah. I think, well, and so here's the other reason. Like I said, like if I got into breweries, like I really, you know, same reason why I really like Bailbreaker, like Deschutes, is like how big they are and stuff. And I mean, that's a lot of money, right? That's like a lot of resources, a lot of money, a lot of heating, cooling, fucking steel, everything. Yeah. But it's the general overhead to get into making wine is quite a bit less, I think, than brewing, because it doesn't require as much refrigeration, doesn't require like kegs or anything. Yeah. Like it's a lot easier, I think, for a winery. A lot of winemakers start off in other people's wineries.
Right.
It's a pretty common practice. It's some people do in brewing, but it's like, you know, if you're a brewery and you've got all your kegs in your cooler and you're on a strict brewing schedule, it's really hard to just like fit somebody in there that just wants to like, you know, take up space or take up your brewing schedule. And so, wine, it's like the overhead's pretty low. It's considerably low. So, yeah, you could turn a case for, you know, a few bucks pretty easily. You know, but you got to sit on it for 18 months.
Right.
It has a different investment into it, right? Like,
when do you know you've made top notch wine, or you're sitting on top of pretty much where you wanted to be?
I think you can tell right after your fermentation, right? Because it's like, if it's a good ferment. Well, that's a good indicator, though. I mean, it could spoil from then till, you know, you bottle, but. You know, you have a good ferment, you taste it, and you're like, oh, this is really good. But, you know, it's got to go through, you know, malolactic fermentation, which just kind of like cuts down the acids. It, you know, lowers the acidity of it, makes it a little bit smoother. And then as it sits in barrels, you know, you've got solids start to precipitate out. And so it starts to clean up, because it's pretty hazy when you first make it. It's like this, like, rich, like purple pink, like creamy color.
Yeah.
And then it's just like it precipitates for those 18 months is really what it does. And so, like, you know, you have a pretty good idea right when it's finished fermenting, you know.
So professionally and in the wine business, when do you think you're on top of it? If and when you know for a fact you're going to continue.
On top of it, like,
yeah, when do you know you're sitting good? I mean, I think
it's a year-to-year thing. Like, if every year, I think there's a couple things. I think if you can open a profitable, like, popular tasting room that people are coming into and, like, drinking at your establishment and buying food or whatever you offer, that's a good indicator. And then if you're growing every year, like, well, that depends. I mean, there's just like small craft breweries that want to stay small and keep it extremely artisan. There's wineries, I think, that, you know, keep it up only to like 10 barrels or something. But if you're really going into it on a business aspect as well as making your wine, I think if you grow every year, you know, or if you add a new varietal to your fleet,
yeah,
you know, that's one thing. That's a pretty good indicator. Yeah, if you know, you did this many tons this year, but the next year you do a few more tons. Like, if every year you progress a little bit.
That's when you know you've made it.
Then I feel like after you've done that for a few years, you got to feel pretty good about, like, you know, making it.
Okay.
As far as an indicator, but yeah.
All right. So what, besides graduating?
Yeah.
Besides fermenting another grape this summer. What's next, man? What's next for you?
Ah, man. Probably, I don't know, probably doing just making more wine. I mean, that's really the next thing. And just trying to figure out, because I kind of did this, I don't want to say under the table, but I was the first person to really work with Kyle on something. So we figured out a way to kind of low-key do it and still be legit, you know. But my next thing I want to do is get totally licensed and bonded, you know, get a business license, just really make it my own entity. Because I was I made my own wine and then just sold it as a Longship wine. Kind of the way we did it. It'd be cool to be able to produce more wine, but also completely under my own paperwork.
I gotcha. All right.
Yeah. I feel like I had progressed a little bit in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything that I missed or anything you want to touch on that I didn't talk about?
Shoot. Not really. I mean, that was kind of big run of it all. We got a lot of good stuff around here. I think we're pretty fortunate, beer and wine, to be able to have such quality, just both.
Right.
You know, it's crazy when you go out into the world and, you know, if you go to big touristy beer places or wine places and you get these people from other places that are, you know, they want some romance to it or they want to experience this thing. And the fact that we can just leisurely you know, you've got enough content to have podcasts of local people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can share wine and share beer and this guy's selling merch, you know, and you know, we're so fortunate. That's to be in the region that we're in for both these things.
Yeah. It's growing, man. Yeah. It's growing and everything else. And it just, you know, to promote the small guys or the not big people are definitely my claim to fame and that what I've been trying to do. I mean, because without them, man, the big guys wouldn't succeed too.
No, they wouldn't. I mean, it's there's a lot. Everybody definitely contributes to the scene and contributes to the industry for sure.
And since this is the longest I've ever lived one place, cause I'm a military brat, a military myself since 2010, it's a different place, man. Tri-City's a different place.
Oh yeah. It totally is.
I mean, from West Pasco to, you know, South Richland. What the heck?
And it's so weird too. And with all these people here, it's again, it just has always blown my mind that the beer scene isn't thriving super hard. With all these people and all those hops, you'd think that and there's a lot, it's per capita, it feels like there's more breweries in small towns in Eastern Washington.
Oh yeah.
Than here where all the people are.
It reminds me of Germany actually.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Germany.
How it was.
Every town, every small town had their own brewery.
Yeah. And that's pretty cool.
And that's what it is. That's how it is around in Pacific Northwest.
I was going to say earlier, one of the reasons why I've been just digressing off that, but I went to Oktoberfest in 2009 or something that. And the first, it was opening day.
Munich?
We watched we watched the parade. We did all this other shit. And so we were late to get a spot at a beer garden or a tent. So we sat down in this Polliner small beer garden. Oh, yeah. All they had was Hefeweizen at this beer garden. You know, we had to go to a different one to actually get the Oktoberfest beer. And, now it's I think that's more of where I've been drinking Hefeweizens lately, because I just remember this flavor and this this acidity of the Hefeweizen and the wheat and the richness of it. And I always go back to that, and I've just been into them, I think.
You know where there's a Hofbräu House, right? Do you know where the nearest Hofbräu House is?
Uh-uh.
Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, right off the strip there. Wow. By the resort. There's a Hofbräuhaus, and it's real German cuisine and beer. It's not big as a beer hall, but you can have your cake and eat it too.
Really?
Every time we go to Coeur d'Alene, we stop there.
Oh, yeah. But I like German beers. I think they're super good.
They're good. And, myself, I went to Dachau. I think it was 2007 Oktoberfest, and it's in September, obviously. But went there and went to the Spaten.
Okay. The Spaten. Oh, so it was like in a smaller town then, huh? Like it was like...
Oh, no, it was in Munich, but it was in the tent. Okay. Spaten the S-P-A.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, their Oktoberfest, and there was a bunch of Australian guys, and I just happened to go with my in-law. Yeah. It was just me and her, because my wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
I had 5 liters.
Oh, yeah.
I was done, dude.
It's so easy to drink.
Like, I was done.
Yeah.
I was done.
It's the most medieval thing I've ever seen. I saw this guy was just chucking. He was just puking his head on the table, and they were just shoveling sawdust on his puke. And they didn't even move him. I was just like, no way. You would never see this anywhere.
And then Puke Hill, where everybody pass out. And
I don't even know about that.
It's infamous. It's really? Called Puke Hill.
I didn't
Hill.
Know that. And That's so funny.
Like 5 liters, right? Yeah. And didn't even eat, maybe a pretzel.
You gotta eat the pretzels to survive.
The pretzel didn't survive.
Yeah.
But I managed, but as we were walking out, I mean, I did great. This one guy just whips out and just starts urinating.
Oh, God.
And it's like, and I'm trying to tell people, it's like a county fair.
Yeah.
It's a county fair, but with a ton of booze,
it's
man.
So hard to, like, describe it to people.
Yeah.
You're like, it's this big, saturated, touristy thing, but it's also crazy. Like,
yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
And then they sell crushed peppermint. Did you see that?
I don't know if I saw that.
They sell crushed peppermint, and you snort it, dude.
Wow.
You snort it.
Wow, I never
did
see that.
You do a few lines of peppermint. It cleansed the sinuses, man.
Really? Wow.
It is peppermint, trust me.
I didn't know that. That's so funny. I didn't know about that.
So if you ever go to Oktoberfest, just know they serve it by the liter, and they sell crushed peppermint to snort. It's a thing, man. Check it out. Google it.
I would like to go back. I think it was totally worth it.
Oh, yeah. Munich is different. Munich, Bavaria is a lot different than the Eastern joint.
I went to Berlin on that same trip.
Oh, yeah. So you definitely had your cake and eat it, too.
It's so
different world.
Yeah, it's a different world for sure. German beer is good. Belgian beer is good. British Real, nah.
Yeah.
That's my least favorite, beer, cultural beer. British real ale is just like, it's undercarbonated, it's cellar temperature.
Oh, it's like cask.
Yeah, it is. That's it. And it's just
so you
like,
don't like cask.
No, not really.
Dude, cask is so good.
I mean, it can be if you got the right beer or whatever. There's probably one that I really liked, tolerated. But at that point, when I went to London, craft brewery, the first time I went to, so I've been to Europe twice. First time I went, there was no craft beer. It was all traditional beer.
And back then the second 1692 establishments.
And that was just in 2009.
Yeah.
Jump ahead 2019. Everywhere I went, they had craft breweries. And they were, trying to basically just emulate American craft beer. I mean, let's be real. That was the big craft beer push, is an American style of beer, and they were trying to emulate it and buying what they call Pacific hops, and stuff like that. And
it's interesting.
And so when I was in London, I just drank
just make English bitter. Bitters, man.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance, though, man, if you ever get a chance, Mule and Elk has a good cask.
Okay.
And also, if you go to Sumner, there's a place called Top Down. I've mentioned that. They mix beers. They have 6-7 beers, and then they mix it to be 13 to 14 beers total. Great stuff. But if you ever go around Puyallup, Sumner area, hit up Shy Dog. And he does some great, he's the same size as Chainsaw, but he does a great English bitter that he has. I mean, that he specializes in, and it is top. Top notch, man.
I mean, it's like, I liked, back in the day, I liked Red Hook's ESB quite a bit.
Yeah. Yep.
I like
that. He has a great ESB, fell in love with it, and I'll tell you, I'll never drink another ESB. I'll only drink his. Yeah.
I don't know if I've had an ESB, and so when I first got into craft beer, that was like 2006 or 7 or something.
How old are you?
36.
Man, okay, right, jeez.
I moved to Mount Hood, like, in 2006, or so. That was about the time, and so I was, like, in Oregon when they first started, craft beer started to really kind of, like, blow up everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And the Thriftway that I was close to my house was just, like, the fridge was just full of Bombers. I miss Bombers so much. Rest in peace. Like, I love Bombers, but, yeah, I was just full of Bombers, and I was just trying so much stuff. I mean, it was just like chocolate, coffee, stouts and porters, fucking all the West Coast IPAs that were everywhere. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, just it was just everything, and ESBs and just anything that I had never – any flavor I'd never tried before, I would just like grab.
Oh, yeah.
It was so cool. But it seems like it's all consolidating down to Bombers are gone. It's really funny, and this is just a theory I have, like, you know, beer got to a point where everyone was making light beers and cans because it was, like, economical and people could drink a lot of light beers. And then craft beer came out, and it was Bombers and brown bottles and, like, you know, not economical, but it was, like, all these flavors and all these super rich beers. And now more and more craft breweries are making lagers and pilsners, and they're all canon. It's just kind of like... I mean, there's still, like, a lot of the rich beers and, like, hazy IPAs and, like, cheesecake beers and all that. But it's really funny that, like, it went full circle back to, like, where it was, like, practical.
It's a fad.
Yeah. It's a fad, but it's cool it happened, honestly. Yeah. It was a really cool – it was, like, a renaissance for beer in this country for sure.
Just like Budweiser tried to buy all craft beers.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They tried because, you know, you look at it, this goes back to just where I was talking about, like, large scale brewing. It's cheaper for Budweiser to buy Elysian than to, like, start making IPA themselves. They're just like, you're our IPA.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know?
Like, you make the IPA.
But we'll keep the name.
We'll keep the name. Well,
it's interesting, man. It's interesting. Your take on, you know, the wine to the beer, big, you know, small.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, man. And I appreciate your take. I appreciate your wine. Yeah. My wife, she was every time I put a winery in her, you know, brainstorm, she's like, winery? You don't drink wine.
Yeah.
She gets a kick out of it. She's like, really? You're going to taste wine? Here are the glasses. And they're goblets. I don't drink out of these.
Yeah.
So hopefully you don't think I'm too foo-foo, but no, they're my wife's. And she's hey, do this, do that. So yeah, that was last week. And then so I brought these up myself and had to tell the story. But dude, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate your wine, and I'm pretty sure when you do get back into the making of it and having your own place, I'm pretty sure a lot more people will like it as well.
Cool. Thank you.
Yes. That. So it's been a pleasure. You can always come back. I'm going to be on this podcast for years, man. Yeah. I can't believe it's almost been 2 years already, man.
It's that's nuts. Pretty good. Yeah, I know. That's pretty nuts. Good. Cause I think I saw you guys started around like, kind of in the middle of COVID, right? Cause
I got tired of all of it, and I needed a release. Yeah. And I was just like, you know what? I got stories too. I'm a no name, but I got stories too.
Hey, that's pretty great. And so, everyone around here has got a story. If they're beer, wine, whatever, everyone's got a story.
Yeah. Like, I mix it up with, you know, going outdoors, climbing mountains, running miles and everything else. And I was like, you know what? I have conversations too over a beer, and I just recently changed the name just because I've been having kids on. Not so much kids, but athletes. You know what I mean? And the last thing I want is a parent to be like, why are you on something yeah. with brews.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know, so.
I get that.
Did I get rid of the name? I did. Is it still the same product? Yes, yeah. It's just not highlighted. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have new things coming out. And, but yeah, man, anytime, even this summer, if you start, you know, fermenting or anything, or in the fall, give me a call. You can come back on.
And, sweet, that'd be awesome. And we'll just kind of keep you updated.
Yeah, highlight your product, man.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'd like to keep the ball rolling and just see where the future takes me. I just got so many ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I bet. I can only imagine. Yeah. I just didn't even. We just got the tip of the iceberg.
Kind of. Just I mean, I didn't really even talk to you. I'm sorry. I didn't really talk about the wine too much.
No. It's my, good. Like, no.
Beer insight.
It's good. So, yeah. So if somebody, let's say somebody heard this,
yeah.
this episode, would there be any chance that somebody can purchase?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah. If somebody wanted to come to me, I would definitely sell a bottle of wine. Yeah.
Okay. How can they reach out to you, man?
Instagram,
Lavish
yeah.
Life.
Yeah, Lavish Life. Or they can go to Lavin Wine. I check it enough.
Lavin Wine. Yeah. LAVN.
Yeah. WINE. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And in a bottle, how much would that be?
Oh, I think, well, I'd still do 28 for them right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's not cheap. That's not a cheap one.
No. I think with the way inflation goes, I think I would, it should be a little more, but you know, I could sell a few bottles still at that.
Okay.
I definitely tried to put out a product that went, you know, it went on the shelf with Longship. It went on the shelf with Kitski Cellars. It went on the shelf with like, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone that was doing pretty good.
Okay.
You know, because I wanted to come out like that.
You well,
know,
when you graduate, yeah. you're you know, engineering school to make, you know, bathrooms for kids. Yeah. No, I'm joking. Yeah. You hey, know, I
whatever buys the grapes.
you got it made, man, because yeah. that wine is good. It got my attention, and that's why you're here. So I appreciate your time, man, and anytime you want on. Give me a call.
Cool. I will.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. Thanks.